They stayed with it. There's the lob for Key. Oh, my goodness, a stuff over his head. Keontae Johnson with 22. K-State leads 94-92 with 52 seconds to play. Here's Walker with 6 seconds. Got up into the air and is knocked away. K-State's got the ball. 2 seconds, 1 second. Noel, layup. Yes, at the buzzer. And K-State has won it in overtime. They knock off a fabulous team in Michigan State. And the Cats are moving on. Wow, what a play. Wildcats win it 98-93.
Well, quite a game last night in Madison Square Garden in New York, and Mr. New York City certainly showed up last night. 20 points, 19 assists, Marquise Noel, and Kansas State wins 98-93 in overtime over Michigan State. And that's what Sweet 16 games are supposed to be. That's how it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be UConn blowing out Arkansas.
No.
It's supposed to be what we saw last night between UCLA and Gonzaga, what we saw against K-State, Michigan State. The difference is K-State, Michigan State was pretty much close throughout the game, whereas UCLA had a 13-point lead and then looked like they ran out of gas because they didn't have much of a bench. They had two guys hurt. And I'm going to say, if I had known two guys were going to be hurt in the Sweet 16 against Gonzaga, I wouldn't have picked UCLA to beat Gonzaga.
A toss-up game to begin with, and then, you throw that factor in. Yeah,
exactly. And they still could have won if not for Strother hitting a shot from the logo to win the game. I thought this was going to be karma for UCLA getting burned on a half-court shot by Jalen Suggs in the Final Four, and instead, Gonzaga did it to him again, and we will hear that play-by-play cut coming up in just a little bit. We will spend certainly some time talking about K-State's win over Michigan State. Tom Izzo, after the game, was talking about some lucky shots that K-State made, and his team didn't play that well. Okay, well, let me throw this out at you. So Michigan State shot 49% from the floor, 55% from three, 82% from the line, and they out-rebounded Kansas State by six and had five more offensive rebounds. So offensively, they played very well. Now, maybe he means defense, and that's all he's counting, which, of course, they did give up 98 points. But it's like, Calipari has apologized to Marquise Noel, reportedly, and direct messaged him and said, I didn't mean any disrespect by that, and that was cool of Cal to do that. But Tom Izzo kind of, I don't know if he owes an apology, but, that's sour grapes. You lost. You make your own breaks. He's been in this business long enough to know. Was there a couple lucky shots? Yeah, but I know Michigan State's had lucky shots in games made deep runs in the tournament. He didn't seem to be too worried about those lucky shots. So he's just frustrated because he thought this team was going to do better, go further, and they were good enough to go further. But in the Sweet 16, it's a lucky break here, or it's a break that you make, or a guy gets in foul trouble, or the bounce of the ball. We saw that with Southeast Saline in a high school state semifinal. Three-pointer halfway down and out. Heston ends up winning a third straight title. That ball goes in. There, Heston's playing for third, and there's a new champion in 3A. Sometimes it's nobody's fault. It's just the roll of the basketball, the roll of the dice, as they say. When you play craps at the crap table and you roll those dice, guess what? Sometimes it just goes one little revolution and you get snake eyes or whatever it might be, or the roulette table. So life is like that. And listen, K-State deserved the win last night. So did Michigan State. They both played great. It was a terrific game. But when you get to these type of games, somebody has to win, somebody has to lose. And you know what? Michigan State couldn't make the plays when they really had to. K-State, the biggest plays, there were so many of them. But, clearly Massoud came up huge.
Oh, absolutely.
Holy shnikes. And that inbounds play, on the baseline to knock that down was just gigantic.
Yeah.
And there are many other big shots in the game, no doubt. And we'll get into it. And of course, the Noel to Johnson alley-oop. Everybody's acting like that was all planned and scripted, and they run that play, and you're not exactly getting that straight up. It looked like it's something that they were trying to fool Michigan State with, but it doesn't seem to be that's exactly what they had in store. It's just that Noel saw Johnson, and they have this connection, and they're like, oh. And Michigan State probably let up because Noel was looking at his coach. And everybody's talking about fake argument, but the coach hasn't said it was a fake argument. And it really wasn't an argument. It was just that I don't want to run this play or I want to run this play. And I will say this about Marquise Noel. Everybody's talking about how glorious about him. But if Kansas State loses that game last night, the 19 assists don't matter. okay? And people are going to talk about what was he doing shooting some of these long distance threes from the logo again. The one, when you're up 82-78, or was it 82-80 when he said it? 82-80.
He was trying to bury him.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But you can bury him with, but exactly. You're up two. Yeah. You bury him with a layup. You can bury him. He's like an 88% foul shooter. You can bury him by getting to the foul line.
Do what you do best. Drive.
He had like 17 assists at that point. So you're killing him with the pass. Don't settle for a shot from the Madness logo when you're up two. And my oldest son and I are watching, and he predicted it was coming. And I'm sure most K-State fans knew it was coming.
Well, I knew by the time where the shot clock was at, that's what he was doing.
Right, and there was another time. Well, it was that was regulation. Yeah, in overtime. Yep. 5 seconds left. He was bailed out by the ball being deflected out of bounds.
That's how Ish got the shot. Was because it was tipped.
Right,
they got it underneath the basket.
But that ball isn't tipped. I don't know if that shot goes in or not. But if he misses that one, like he did the one late in regulation, Michigan State's down one with the basketball and have all kinds of options with about 20 seconds to play. So those Marquise Noel last night was a perfect example of the feast and famine that is Marquise Noel. I mean, 20 points, 19 assists, only 2 turnovers is insanely sensational. At the same time, if that shot of his doesn't get blocked from 28, 30 feet and out of bounds, people may be talking today about, dude, I love Noel, but what the heck was he thinking? Not once, but a couple of times when you don't need a three. Like, you didn't need a three when you're up 82-80. You didn't need a three. And he settled for that. And he didn't need to settle. He was getting in the lane whenever he wanted to. When I was watching, I didn't get to watch every single second of the game. I was doing baseball practice. But the guy was dominating the game. And you can dominate by scoring, or as Barkley said, you could dominate by passing. He dominated by passing. I mean, he was terrific. But he has those shots where he plays hero ball. Like, if he is allowed to, he'd shoot from half court to try to win the game. And that's a great mentality in some ways, but it certainly can hurt you a lot. And I thought, when he shot that three at the end of regulation, late in regulation, and Michigan State was down two, I thought K-State was losing the game.
Mm-hmm.
I totally thought that was I was like, dear Lord, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You can do this in regular season games, but in Sweet 16, you can't. And he got away with it. And I think it will come back to bite K-State at some point if he keeps doing that. Having said all of that, without Marquise Noel, you have no chance of winning this game. I mean, the guy was insane with the passing. 19 assists, a new tournament record. I mean, made big shots. He's automatic at the foul line. He came up with a huge steal at the end of overtime to seal the deal, as you just heard, and got the layup at the end. I mean, Marquise Noel is an amazing talent. He is so fun to watch. But he does. He is one of those guys that you just sit here as a fan, and probably even as a coach sometimes, you just sit here and go, oh my God, that is unbelievable. And at the same time, what are you doing? You want to pull your hair out in celebration and in frustration, because Marquise Noel is just that type of player, which keeps you on the edge of your seat. It is very entertaining. And it's just, I will say, there are times K-State, they got away with it last night, but there are times where K-State gets away with undisciplined things. They're not as disciplined as other teams. They aren't. And that's actually a pro and a con. It's a pro because Coach Tang gives them the freedom to do, like, just like improvise and do the alley-oop. Yeah. I mean, that's not normal play at all. And it was an amazing, awesome play. We were jumping off our couch watching that, like, dear Lord, what a play. But there's also, as we talked throughout the year, we can make the simple pass, we make the behind-the-back pass, the no-look diagonal pass 25 feet and throw the ball out of bounds, those type of turnovers. Now, in the tournament so far, in Kentucky, 8 turnovers. And here's the number that stands out last night. And Michigan State's not good at forcing turnovers. They played overtime, all right? 45 minutes of ball last night. K-State turned it over 5 times. Listen, if K-State turns the ball over less than 10 times every game here on out, I'd be stunned if they're not national champions. Because they get so many possessions. The only thing would happen is if they might be low on turnovers, play a team that's a grinded out, long possession, slow down the tempo. And when I was at baseball practice, I looked at my phone and I saw that at halftime it was 43-38. I said, K-State's going to win this game because of what we talked about yesterday. Mm-hmm. If it's in the 60s, Michigan State's going to win. If it's anything higher, K-State should win. But yet, at the same time, Michigan State dang near pulled it off playing in the 80s and then going into the 90s in overtime. They darn near pulled it off. So it was a sensational game, and K-State is fun to watch. And I said this back in January, that Kansas State is a team that can make it to the Final Four. They're a national championship contender. I threw it out there and I said, is it too early to say that? You said no, because based on how they're playing, they are. And they were. But I didn't have them going deep in my bracket because at the end of the year, they weren't playing nearly as well. TCU, they played horrible in the Big 12 tournament. Their defense was atrocious. Noel was not good, did not play, way too many turnovers. And there's no way you could pick K-State to go deep in the bracket based off of that performance. Okay, and plus there was thought that they might need that win for a 3 seed. Well, they got the 3 seed, which some people could argue that might have been a bit of a break. That could have been a 4. If Tennessee was fully healthy with their point guard, maybe they would have been a 3 and K-State would have been a 4 and a different draw, which maybe would have been great. And now K-State sit up in a situation that they've been in twice before in the last 13 years. Exciting win in the Sweet 16. Okay, in 2010, you beat Xavier, you beat them in double overtime, sensational win, you play a lower-seeded Butler, you're favored to win, you're supposed to win, K-State fans are already booking their tickets for the Final Four, and K-State went out and lost, right? Okay, and Butler went to the national championship, and they were a Gordon Hayward half-court shot of nearly banking it in and winning the title. Okay, that was a good Butler team. Then, 2018 with Bruce Weber, K-State catches a break when the 1 seed goes down. They beat UMBC. Then they knock off Kentucky. So now they're in the Sweet 6. They win the game against Kentucky to go to the Elite 8. And everybody's sitting here going, well, this is automatic. We just beat Kentucky, and we're really peaking. And Loyola Chicago, well, that's a great story with the lady in a wheelchair and the 100-year-old lady. That's a great story and all, but it ends. We're not going to lose again to a lower-seeded team that we're supposed to beat in Elite 8. And Kansas State didn't play that well in that game, and they lost. So here we are again, ladies and gentlemen. The third time the charm for K-State, because you just beat a pretty well-known team again. You beat
two
Kentucky.
In a row.
Yeah, two in a row. But you beat Kentucky in 16 and 18 in the Sweet 16. You beat Michigan State in an overtime thriller that took a lot out of you, just like in 2010, double overtime against Xavier, which by the way, that game I think was better than Michigan State Kansas State last night. That game I watched. That was an amazing game, okay? So it's immediately when K-State fans say, well, that's the greatest game I've ever seen play. Well, you must not have seen the 2010 game, or you just simply forget because it's 13 years ago. Because that game was right there with this game. I mean, they're both very close, no doubt, okay? Both put them in the Elite Eight. But then how much gas is in the tank when you turn around and now you're not going to have a brand name that you're going to see? You're not going to see Tennessee, who a lot of people thought they were going to. And I remember saying on the show yesterday, Florida Atlantic is really good, guys. Let's not automatically pencil Tennessee over. And Tennessee lost. And Florida Atlantic is very athletic. And they're playing with house money. That's exactly what Butler was doing in 2010. That's exactly what Loyola Chicago was doing back in 2018. And K-State, once again, will be the favorite, as they should be. And they've been good as being underdog so far in this tournament, and now they're going to be the favorite. So how much did they have to use and spend to win last night? And now they'll take on Florida Atlantic team that they are supposed to beat. And we've seen Kansas State 2 times not get this done after getting huge, unbelievable, awesome wins. We've also seen Kansas do this as well, by the way. So let's not pick on K-State. Kansas in 2011. They had a cakewalk to the Final Four, seed-wise. All these upsets happen, and they had a 12 seed in the Sweet 16, Richmond, and they destroyed them, and they go into VCU, and everybody... Listen, I know of friends of mine that already booked tickets and bought tickets before the Elite Eight game against VCU. And KU goes 2 of 20 from 3, VCU wins, and the first four play-in games, a team made it all the way to the Final Four in Shaka Smart and VCU. And everybody thought KU had automatic. There's no need to play the game. So Kansas State fans, I hope you have learned your lesson 2 times, because this you have to win this game now. And you may say, well, what do you mean you have to win this game? Before the season, Wade, you talked about, you and Dusty have been talking all year long about this is house money, and K-State, nobody thought they'd make it to the tournament, or if they did, they wouldn't go very far. Nobody thought they'd be a 3 seed in the tournament. They thought it'd be a bubble team, and what Jerome Tang's doing, you would take this in a heartbeat. That's true. But now that you are here, and now that you have the opportunity that is not guaranteed next year or ever again for Jerome Tang or this Kansas State team. I mean, listen, Jerome Tang may go to 6 Elite Eights in the next 8 years and go to 5 Final Fours and win 2 titles. I don't know. Or this might be the best season Jerome Tang ever has at Kansas State. All of those things are possible. So if you're all, and I use the analogy 1,000 times, Dan Marino early in his career went to the Super Bowl and thought, okay, we lost, big deal, we'll be back. Never got back. And he's a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest quarterbacks that ever lived. Never got back. Kansas State has to approach this as, listen, we may never get back here again. Now, there's there's a little danger of saying that to your fan base, because Jerome Tang then saying, well, this might be the highlight of my career. No, no, no. We're going to do this on a regular basis. We're going to make deep runs. We're going to challenge for Big 12 titles. We're going to go to Final Fours. So he might not want to say that publicly to the fan base. But what he needs to tell his team is, this is the only time we're all going to be together. We have a chance to do something K-State hasn't done for a long, long, long time. We are going to the Elite Eight. We now have an opportunity, and it doesn't matter if we play Tennessee or Florida Atlantic. We should beat no. Which they should. And honestly, if it was Tennessee, K-State should have been favored. Mm-hmm. You need to win this game. It's all set up. You've done all this work. You've beaten Kentucky. You beat Michigan State. Those are really good, great teams and programs. Florida Atlantic, just because they're not a name brand, doesn't mean they're really, really good. They are. They match up with the metrics with K-State and everything else. So this is probably going to be a dogfight coming up on Saturday. And the hardest game to win, ask any of the coaches, is the Elite Eight game. It's the hardest game to win. Once you get to Final Four, you relax a little bit. You're like, all right, the four best teams are here. Now we just play ball. And on top of it, now you're going in. If K-State was going this game as an underdog against Purdue, honestly, I think I like K-State chances better. And that sounds nuts to say. But sometimes when you're the favorite, there suddenly is more pressure. And you're taking on an upstart Cinderella, and they have nothing to lose. And we've seen it now twice with K-State in the last 13 or 14 years. Will it happen a third time? Will K-State lose to a team they're supposed to beat in the Elite Eight to get to the Final Four? And remember, 2010 was Frank Martin. 2018 was Bruce Weber. Okay? This is the third different coach they've had now go to the Elite Eight, which is pretty impressive. Now they got to finish it. Simple as that. They got to finish it. They got to get there now.
Yeah, my cousin sent me a snap last night, and all it said was Owls, because Florida Atlantic was about to win, right? And I was like, got to win it.
Absolutely.
There's no in between here. The whole K-State, we didn't expect this house money thing stopped the night they beat Kansas at Brentwood Coliseum. For me, it was because they started 5-1, they won the next one, they were 6-1. This was a different. For me, it was a different way of looking at this team compared to what we saw at the beginning of the year, because we knew at that point that they had the potential to do something like this. And for me, the whole it's still a fun story no matter what happens at the end here, right? Elite Eight, if they finish there, but the whole, you know, this underdog mentality, for me, that's the night it stopped for in my mind. And it might be different for other people. It might be different for other K-State fans.
Well, but when you're playing against Kentucky, when you're playing against Kentucky, the name brand Kentucky in the second round, I think there's a lot of K-State fans that wouldn't have been too horribly mad had they lost to Kentucky.
I would have been mad.
Because you're playing Kentucky, and Kentucky's very talented. And so if you would have lost to Kentucky, it'd been like, you know what? It's still a heck of a year, right? We made it to the second round of the tournament. We had a great year, third in the Big 12, and so forth and so on. And you probably would have been satisfied to an extent with that, which sounds crazy. Now you're going to the Elite Eight, and you're not going to be satisfied with Elite Eight. But there are people that would have been satisfied with, okay, well, we lost to Kentucky. And that all goes down to the name on the jersey more than anything. Because back in January, you said after KU win, you know, your expectations changed. And I think that's true of many K-State fans. But then the way they finished the season and didn't play great, I think the expectations shifted again to, well, if we can get to Sweet 16, that would be awesome. And a lot of K-State fans I've talked to were like, if we get to the Sweet 16, that's tremendous. That was kind of the ceiling, even going into the tournament, because of how poorly they were playing, especially TCU. There are K-State fans going, I just hope to God we don't lose the first round game. And if we somehow can get by Kentucky, that's awesome. Sweet 16, if we win all these games in his first year and we beat Kentucky and we lose to Purdue or somebody in a Sweet 16, that's a heck of a run. People were content with that. They really were. And if they lost to Kentucky, like, well, you know, we had a great year, and imagine what's going to happen next. But now, suddenly, you beat Kentucky, you beat Michigan State, and it sounds crazy, but now it's like, this isn't enough now. And why is that? Because you're one step away from the Final Four. But the biggest reason is because who you're going to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Which can be fool's gold, because people disrespect Florida Atlantic because they're not a Kentucky on the front of their jersey or Michigan State. They don't have a known commodity as a coach. You can't name any of the players. They're 34-3.
Yeah.
But people don't see them that way. So it's just like, well, you know, this is set up for us perfectly.
Yeah,
and so now it'll be hugely disappointing that you only make the Elite Eight when you talk to K-State fans a week and a half ago, and they're going, you know, if we just, you know, round of 32 would be okay. Sweet 16 would be sweet, certainly would be, and I'd be good with that. That's what I had some K-State fans tell me. And now all of a sudden you win a couple games, and now you're saying, well, it's a horrible disappointment if we don't make the Final Four. Because to me, the main reason is who you're playing Saturday night.
That's absolutely the reason for the Final Four part of it. But for me, listen, this team was top 16 pretty much most of this Big 12 season. Right. So for me, if they'd have lost to Kentucky, I would have been disappointed with that. Like, right. There might have been some other K-State fans that weren't. Right. But my thing was, got to be at least Sweet 16.
And that's what most K-State fans told me.
It's like, I don't care if it says Kentucky on that jersey. It says 6 next to their name.
Or the higher
three
seed.
Next to ours.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's just like Wichita State, right? Like, when they were undefeated, they felt all right because they lost to Kentucky.
Yeah.
And it's like, you were the one seed and they were the 8. I don't care what their name says on their jersey. Right. That's the exact same feeling I had going into the Kentucky game.
I hear you.
Like, I can't lose in the round of 32 if I was in the top 12, really. I mean, I'm the 11th team on this bracket when it came out. And if I don't make the Sweet 16, if I get beat in the round of 32, no, I'm not content with that as a K-State fan. I would have been upset because they played such a good season and had such a good year, and did things that we weren't expecting at the beginning of the year. But I'd not have been happy about it if they'd have lost to Kentucky. And I know there are some K-State fans that would have been fine with that. But I think if you went into this tournament expecting anything less than a Sweet 16, then I think you're in a different spot than I was. That's just kind of the way it is.
And I think it's all because of the name Kentucky.
Exactly.
If it was...
And Michigan State has one of those names, too. So if you don't make it to the Elite Eight, you might feel okay about that, too, right? Well, but you've made it to 16 at that point.
If you're playing Creighton instead of Kentucky, and Creighton's a 6 seed,
yeah.
If you had played Creighton instead of Kentucky, you'd been horribly disappointed to make Sweet 16.
But absolutely. Since Kentucky, I think everybody would.
Since Kentucky was the 6 seed, you're like, well, you know.
It's like, oh, it's...
Well, we had a tough draw.
Program.
We had a tough... We got the toughest 6 seed.
Yeah.
Because Kansas says, well, it was 8 seed. Well, whatever. It's easy to say that after you lose. And they got destroyed last night, which I think UConn's just really that good. I do. I mean, they're really that good. Arkansas had their Super Bowl, and they beat Kansas, took their shirt off, and celebrated, which is fine. That's legal, by the way, KU fans. I know you think it's disrespectful and illegal, but whatever. It's not. Stealing the goalpost throwing the lake, you know, that seemed to be illegal, but apparently that was allowed, too. But Kansas State last night... I mean, Johnson came up big. Tomlin hit a couple of huge clutch free throws there that people are overlooking as well. Noel was terrific, except for, you know, a few shots where you're just like, oh, dear Lord. But he was sensational otherwise, no doubt. And then Masood. Masood needs to get more credit than he gets because this is a kid, one of the few holdovers, one of two from last year, him and Noel. A guy that was grew up five miles away from Madison Square Garden, I read this story, where he started putting up 500 shots a day out in the park or wherever it was. And then he's warming up at Madison Square Garden. I saw that on tweet yesterday. I thought that was pretty cool. And he hit a massive shot on the baseline. He hit massive shots throughout the night. And he was sensational. And you need those type of guys. Remember, Desi Sills fouled out in regulation, and there's plenty of time left when he fouled out. Keontae Johnson played played all but 14 seconds last night. Okay, so he stayed out of the major foul trouble. Sometimes that's been an issue. Noel played 43 of a 45 minutes. Cam Carter had to play 37, with Sills only playing 19. But Masood last night was 5 of 8, 4 of 6 from 3. He had 15 points. We talk about Noel, 20 points, 19 assists, 5 steals, 2 turnovers. That's an insane, amazing line. He had one of the best tournament performances of a point guard in the tournament. There's no doubt about that. And Johnson was 22 points on 10 of 18. And there's a few times where, obviously, he took guys that are smaller and took him into the post. And late in the game, for some reason, he settled for a step-back three. I'm like, dude, you just told the guy he's too small. And now you settled for a 23-footer. Those are the type of things that drive me insane watching K-State. Like, Johnson and Noel have advantages. I have a 7-footer out there on the perimeter that you can blow by. I'm going to shoot. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to settle for a 30-footer against a 7'8" wingspan. Like, you don't think the 7-footer's like, oh, thank God, he's shooting that. You know, you don't think the guy that's smaller on Keontae Johnson's going, oh, okay, he wants to shoot the three? Hey, if he hits it, so be it, man. I'm cool with that. So him just bullying me down on the block. So there are times where you just like, just keep doing what's working. But they're winning, so how can we argue, right? If you lose, all those things come up today. But you win, so everything's glorious. And that's how sports is. But that's going to be interesting because Kansas State last night, they shot 56% from the floor. 11 of 24 from 3, that's 46%. 11 of 16 from the line. They got out-rebounded again, which has been kind of a common thing here in the tournament. and yet they still found a way to win. They actually had more points in the paint. The bench came up big, with Masood in particular, and Michigan State did have 13 turnovers, and K-State points off turnovers was 16-2 in favor of K-State. That was a big part of the game last night as well. You know, when Walker made the layup to tie the game at 82, I thought Michigan State was going to win. I thought when Noel threw the huge long shot late in regulation, I thought Michigan State was going to win. But to K-State's credit, they made plays. The alley-oop from Noel to Johnson was sensational. It was Masood that honestly maybe had the bigger shot, although he don't have a big shot if they don't do the alley-oop. Mm-hmm. So everything ties together. But it was a very entertaining and fun game to watch last night between these teams. Brandon Cox, head coach of Bullitt baseball team, coming up in just a moment. But let's hear from Jerome Tang on Noel's assist, a new tournament record.
What really helps is that all 10 eyes on the defense have to pay attention to him. And that's what allows everybody else to get open, right? And so it's not just that he sees it, but they all have to pay attention to him when he has the ball in his hands.
Yeah, offense and defense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he came up with the biggest defensive play with the steal there at the end of the game. Now, you know, what was interesting about this game is that K-State was up at halftime. They were up 8. And then all of a sudden, things turn. You miss a dunk. Then shortly after that, boom, Noel goes with the injury, the ankle. And K-State fans, I guarantee, were like, oh, dear Lord, it's going south now.
It didn't feel good.
No, well, how would it?
Because Tomlin misses the dunk. Like, you're up 10, and then boom, it's 5.
That's a 5-point swing.
8 because he didn't make the dunk, and kid makes a 3 right away.
5-point swing.
5 points.
Yep.
Unreal, dude.
Absolutely.
That's the next
How many
possession.
Times have we seen turnovers where you have a 10-second call and you're in control? Now, we see that happened again last night. UCLA-Gonzaga happened in the KU-Arkansas game, where a 5-second call, where you're in control and you just make a silly turnover, and then you could have scored on that possession and go up 7 or 8. Instead, the other team scores, and now it's 2 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
What were you going to say?
The very next possession, Noel had a shot in the lane, got fouled, but it just rimmed off. It just fell off the rim. It very well could have fell in, but he only hit one of the 2 free throws. Michigan State goes down and scores again. So there's another little bit of a swing as well. You're just like, oh, if you just finish one of those plays. And obviously the ankle injury was the biggest part there.
So he has the ankle injury. So he missed a dunk. He has ankle injury. On top of that, Michigan State goes on a run. And you're thinking, uh-oh, our season's coming to an end, right? I mean, that's what you're thinking the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly
the gut
are.
Feeling is that when he goes out with the injury.
Yeah. But then Noel comes in and he's just lucky, as Tom Izzo says, and he banks in a 3 as the shot clock expired to tie the game at 55. And that was a gigantic shot, because if he misses that, I mean, all the momentum is on Michigan State's side. He makes it and all of a sudden things shift. Here is Tang on the injury to Noel.
When I saw Marquise go down and hobble off, I knew he wasn't staying out, right? Like, that dude didn't come here to be injured on the last college game. So I knew he was coming back in. And we get guys hurt at practice all the time, and we have to move on to the next thing. And every guy in the huddle said, next man up, let's go. And then, you know, everybody responded.
And then Mr. New York City was in New York City. Noel, of course, he was talking to Isaiah Thomas, former NBA great for the Pistons, who was right there next to Mateen Cleaves, who was the point guard of national champion Spartans back in 2000. A lot of notable Spartans in attendance, of course. Magic Johnson had a nice shout-out to Marquise Noel on Twitter I saw last night. That was pretty cool. Magic knows all about being a point guard, even though he's about 3 feet taller than Marquise Noel. Okay, he's a foot taller, though. Yeah. He really is. He's a foot taller. Noel on the emotions of getting the win and moving on.
But today was a special one. Man, I got to give a lot of credit to my teammates for battling, for fighting through adversity when we was down. I can't even explain how I'm feeling right now. I just know that, you know, I'm blessed and I'm grateful.
And then what about the fake out, or it seemed to be a fake out, and the alley-oop to Johnson as he was initially looking at Coach Tang, and they're disagreeing on what they wanted to run?
It was just a basketball play between me and Keontae. We knew how Michigan State, you know, plays defense. They play high up. And Keontae just told me, like, we got eye contact, and he was like, lob, lob. And, you know, I just threw it up, and he made a great play.
So that was one thing we were talking about back in January, and I made the brash statement, and I had some KU fans telling me I was crazy. I look pretty smart now. And I said, after watching K-State, before they even got into the conference play, we talked about this. I said, I think K-State might be more athletic than KU. And I was just told I was crazy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, just because you have a name on your jersey doesn't mean somebody can't be more athletic than you. KU might be the better team, okay? All right? They might have the greatest coach in the land, but that doesn't mean they're the most athletic team. I mean, Arkansas was more athletic than Kansas, and they just got, but Kansas had the better team, but they still lost because they made some mistakes. But you could see it back in December how athletic this team was. I mean, there were highlight reel plays right off the beginning. Mm-hmm. Alley-oops to Tomlin, Johnson, Noel with the flashy play. And they've had flashy plays in the last two games. A behind-the-back pass to Johnson screaming down the lane for a dunk against Kentucky. Last night, of course, the alley-oop. That was a gigantic play. Just made everybody stand up, even if you were not even cheering for K-State. I think it makes you stand up. You're like, dear Lord, what a play that is. If you appreciate basketball, you appreciate that play. So we knew they had the athleticism. It's just, would they be able to have that cohesion, and then would they buy into playing defense, which I'm still not fully sold on that. I think it's better, but they did give up 93, by the way, and they did give up 82. But they're so good offensively when they don't turn the ball over that, they, you know, honestly, when I think about it, and I know this sounds crazy, you're gonna, people are going to be listening and go, why do you have to compare this to KU? But I do think it applies. This team reminds me, and it just hit me, this team reminds me a lot of Roy Williams' teams with Kansas. Roy Williams' teams weren't the greatest defending teams. I remember 2003, they were scoring tons of points, but they didn't stop anybody. But they outscored people, and that got them all the way to the national championship. And when they played defense, like they did against Dwayne Wade and Marquette, they blew them out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they couldn't hit free throws against Syracuse, and they lost. But Roy Williams' teams were like this. They had these sensational plays, highlight reel plays. I think K-State's got even better highlight plays than that team, those teams. But KU could play above the rim. They were very athletic. They had pros on their team. K-State's definitely got a couple. And they would. There were many nights where they just simply could not be stopped. They just outscored you. The only way they were going to lose is if they turned the ball over. And there were times KU did that. And I think eventually that cost Roy Williams a chance to win a national title because they didn't play good enough defense to win at all. And I think that would be the same thing we could apply to K-State here. Can K-State play good enough defense to win at all now? Can they win three more games and play good enough defense to win? It doesn't mean they got to hold teams under 60 or 50. Can they play good enough defense to win at all? They definitely could play good enough offense, but as you hear the old hold thing, defense wins championships, offense wins games. Typically, you have to play some defense somewhere, somehow. And there's no doubt Kansas last year, national championship game, played horrible defense first half and gave up 40. Second half, they were outstanding defensively, got them right back in the game. And when you play great defense, you're never out of a game. But you could argue if you're really good offensively, you're never out of a game either. Mm-hmm. It just depends. And so there are a few similarities when I look at that. And those teams at KU were great, but they were never quite good enough to win a title for Roy Williams at KU. So the question now is K-State got enough offense to overcome? And if they don't turn it over, they can probably get away with not playing lockdown defense all the time, right? They don't have to be that type of team. The question is, can you win the national championship playing this way? Can you win it scoring in a high level, high volume? Now, Kentucky was in the 60s, okay? That should be pointed out. They won that game and it was in the 60s. So they've proven they can do that in the tournament as well. But I think the only question you've got with Kansas State for me is still, okay, when you play against a team like Alabama, when you play against a team that's just as good as you offensively, can you win that game?
Right.
Because we will find out. Michigan State last night was just as good offensively as K-State. The numbers bear it out.
Mm-hmm.
And K-State did win. But it was 98-93. But we've seen this. 97-95 over Baylor and Waco. 116-103 in Austin. It's fun to watch. It's entertaining basketball. And I don't know the answer to my question. I really don't. I mean, they might be able to go on and score 90 in each of the next three games and win the national championship and cut down the nets. And if that's the case, Jerome Tang should retire. You just end it. Because it'll never get better than that. Unless you repeat. It's, you talk about how spoiled KU fans are and Oklahoma football fans, you know, and Alabama fans. You talk about how spoiled K-State could be here in a little bit, in a week or two. Hey, we got a new head coach in his first year. Hell, our coach is better than Bill Self. First year, Tang went in and won the whole dang thing. Yeah, but where is there to go after that? There's nowhere to go but down. There's nowhere to go up anymore. Like, if you go to the Sweet 16, you're like, okay, next year we're going to go to the Final Four. And then next year we're going to win it all. No. First year, Jerome Tang's like, yeah, this is easy peasy. Crazy faith. All we needed. Boom. We win a national title. He should just call it good. Retire. You know, actually, he won't do that. He should get a gigantic raise. That's for sure. But it would be amazing if he could, in his first year, go to a team picked last in the preseason, go to a team that was a losing team last year under Bruce Weber, have only two players on the roster from that team from last year, lost Nigel Pack, who's still playing in the NCAA tournament tonight for Miami in Kansas City, And now you're one step away from the Final Four. And all those things I said sound glorious. And you're like, so who cares? Everything else is gravy, right? Yeah, but now you have Florida Atlantic in the Elite Eight. You have to win the game, or what's going to happen is, can you imagine K-State loses to Florida Atlantic on Saturday night? There will be K-State fans, believe it or not, and every fan base has these people. I love Tang, but I don't know what he was doing in that Elite Eight game. He just got out-coached by this guy from Florida Atlantic I never heard of. You can hear it now, right? Mm-hmm. Well, why didn't he reel in Noel? We were too undisciplined. We made too many turnovers, too many flashy plays. Why did he let Noel shoot it from the logo? Well, that's just part of their identity. It's worked more often than it hasn't. So you don't change who you are now. And that's one thing I admire about Jerome Tang is that he does give them a lot of freedom mm-hmm. to do things. And there are times where you watch it and you're like, God, please, Coach Tang, reel it in a little bit. But he talked about yesterday after the game that, you know, these guys have freedom to play. You know, we chew on them at times, certainly, but they have the freedom to play. And you can see that they play fairly freely.
There's a lot about the way he runs this program that's unconventional.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, and it starts with him, just the way kind of he comes in every press conference, you know, thanking Jesus mm-hmm. and all those things. But then kind of, I mean, just exudes love, right? And that's one thing that's weird about it. Or not weird, but different about it. And then just kind of the freedom. And even in game, when you're watching, it's like, how many times I've been with my buddy at a game, like, dude, call timeout right now. Yeah. They're on a run. You need a timeout right now. And he'll wait a couple more possessions than most coaches will.
Yeah.
Because sometimes his kids will make a play. Noel yeah. will make a play. You know, Keontae will back somebody in and get a bucket to stop a run. And he lets them kind of understand, mm-hmm. okay, this is where it needs to stop. And if it doesn't stop, then he'll call the timeout. But it's just a little unconventional sometimes about how he goes about things. And then the freedom that he just lets everybody mm-hmm. play with is like, it's refreshing compared to the last coach, because the last coach didn't give you any freedom to do anything you wanted. You had to do everything within the system. Mm-hmm. And so when you get into that, and I don't like to bring him up very much when I'm talking about this year's team, but there are some comparisons that need to be made with some of these things that they're doing and comparing how different the program is run right now. And I really like, you know, it's feast or famine. Like, I love it because he gives them that freedom, mm-hmm. but I hate it when Marquise is shooting logo threes when you're up by two
in the Sweet 16
or three, whatever it might be. You know, like, okay, you don't need a three. You need two points to get a two possession lead.
A two would have clinched it. Yeah.
It's like, I don't need, and you've been driving all night. You've got you're at that point close to the NCAA tournament record in a single game for assists. Go to the basket
and you get fouled. You're at 90%.
And so it's like all that stuff is fun, right? And I love the freeness and the easy flow that they can play with, but sometimes it hurts you.
Well, we talk about it with the Chiefs, like, why don't they run the ball more? And there are times where I think it's obvious they should run the ball more, but I have people that come back at me and they say, well, that's just their identity. That's who they are. That's how they got to where they are, and they're not going to change it. That's just, you just got to mm-hmm. live with it. And I'm like, well, true, but, you know, a few more carries might help, you know, take some pressure off the quarterback. And you could argue, well, you know, Noel taking a few less logo threes might be a little bit better for the team. But at the same time, he hits some of those as well. So he takes enough of them, he's going to make a few. There's no doubt about that. But just an amazing performance by K-State's Marquise Noel last night. 20 points, 19 assists, and only two turnovers. And only five for the game, and they played 45 minutes. Masood was great. Johnson was great. And K-State wins. They're 26-9. They will take on Florida Atlantic, who knocked off the 4-seed Tennessee, 62-55. Florida Atlantic is 34-3. They are the 9-seed, so the bracket opens up once again for K-State, like it did in 2010, like it did in 2018. They come off a really great win in the Sweet 16 in all three instances. Can they close the deal against a team they should be favored against? We shall see on Saturday night at 5:09 is the tip time in New York City. And we will go ahead. We'll get Brandon Cox's interview coming up in just a little bit. I want to close out the college basketball. So Arkansas, by the way, got blown out by Connecticut, 88-65. UConn looks like a national championship-caliber team. There's no doubt about that. They got size. They got athleticism. They got good shooting guards. They're playing great. And they move on. UConn will take on Gonzaga. Gonzaga coughed up. You talk about a near major choke job. I mean, Gonzaga was up by 9 or 10 with 2 minutes to go. And next thing you know, UCLA hit a three after Drew Timmy missed two free throws. UCLA hits a three. And I thought, here we go. This is karma and payback for the Jalen Suggs half-court shot in the Final Four a few years back that won the game for Gonzaga, put him in a national title game against Baylor. And so the Bailey kid hits the three with about 12 seconds to go. Gonzaga gets it, and they drop a play to just let a guy shoot. I mean, it was a handoff, and the guy was supposed to either originally, Coach Few said, it's for Strother to drive it, but I kind of knew that he might just go ahead and pull for three.
We've been a basketball conference. That's, I mean, the last
wrong
4
cut.
Years.
Let me try this one.
Strother for the lead.
And so Gonzaga got a strip of the ball on a last-second shot as well, just like K-State did last night against Michigan State. It was a crazy game. UCLA's missing two key players, one late in the season due to an injury, their best defender. Their second-best defender couldn't go last night due to a shoulder injury, and that hurt them a lot because Drew Timmy, it would have been different if they had that guy in there against Timmy. Timmy! 36 points, and anybody know the reference to what that is?
Yes.
I just want to make sure. I don't.
I think we're all old enough in here.
Well,
some of the people might not know.
I don't know. I mean, I got no reaction when I went Timmy, so I started to worry about you guys.
Kevin Harlan, I don't know if he meant to do it or not, but just a couple times he just yelled out, Timmy. And
I've heard it so many times.
I don't know if he meant to.
I think he did. Kevin Harlan's very clever. Yeah,
I didn't have the reaction because I've heard it so many times. The dude's been at Gonzaga for 10 years, so like it's been going on for a while.
Yeah. Well, fine. 36 points and 13 rebounds.
You're not original, Wade.
Well, I wasn't saying I was. I just thought it was fun. So, but fine, just mess up my fun parade. So the Bulldogs of Gonzaga will play UConn 7:49 coming up on Saturday. And K-State and Florida Atlantic's early game Saturday at 5:09, as we mentioned. Tonight's Sweet 16 matchups. You've got Alabama, number one seed, against San Diego State, the five seed. That'll be 5:30 tonight. And then followed in that region, it'll be Creighton, the six seed. They'll take on the 15 seed Princeton at 8 o'clock. That'll be in Louisville. And
Jays.
Yeah, get that in there.
Yep.
You know, a Tiger should destroy a Blue Jay, really. But
nice.
But a Spartan and a Wildcat, yeah, that could be a good battle. And it was. Princeton trying to make it two straight seasons for a 15 seed to make the Elite Eight. St. Peter's did it last year. Creighton looking for just their second Elite Eight appearance in school history. The other one was in?
It's like the 1940s or something.
Just before Jason was born. tip off 8 o'clock in Louisville. In the Midwest in Kansas City, a lot of Jayhawk fans a few weeks ago thought they'd be there tonight, but they're not. Number one seed Houston, 33-3, takes on the five seed Miami. That will be at 6:15. And then the final Sweet 16 of the night should be a really good ball game. 8:45 with CBS. Number two Texas, 28-8, against Xavier, the three seed, who's 27-9. That will be a dogfight. And Texas, last time played Kansas City, won the Big 12 tournament. So it worked out pretty well for Texas. Paul Mills was officially introduced as the new head coach of the Wichita State men's basketball team yesterday. He comes to Wichita State from Oral Roberts after leading the Golden Eagles to the NCAA tournament two of the past three seasons. Sweet 16 appearance in 2021 as a 15 seed, and he's the 27th head coach in Wichita State basketball history, and the Shocker job is just his second college head coaching stop. Prior to the five seasons he spent at Oral Roberts, he was with the Baylor Stat and worked with current K-State coach Jerome Tang with Scott Drew from 2003 to 2017, and he says he's not afraid of the expectations at Wichita State.
Shocker Nation, it is an absolute honor. I am humbled to be here. We graciously accept the opportunity here. We are not timid about this process. We know people expect to win. I can assure you that my entire family expects to win too. So we could not be more excited about this opportunity.
I say all the right things at an inductory press conference, so I think it's a good hire. There's a guy I have really been annoyed by for a very long time in Wichita that does talk radio that I think he thinks that everybody needs to bow down and kiss him on his feet.
And hard to figure out who you're talking about there,
yeah,
I don't think.
Yeah, no. Well, and it might be father-son combination.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
For me, it's the son that bothers. Just some of the dumb
just
things.
Just gets passed down. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, you did, didn't you? And I'm it's just like, well, this doesn't impress me. I'm like, well, the job isn't to impress you because you're just some schmo. Okay, the job by the athletic director is get the right hire. It doesn't have to be the flashy guy. It's like Lance the Spoken is on this DeAndre Hopkins kick. He's like, I trust Brett Veach. And I trust that Brett Veach will not make a colossal mistake and not sign DeAndre Hopkins and trade for him. Like, you could have stopped after the first sentence because you don't trust him if you say everything else that you say. And I don't know. I think the guy knows what he's doing since he traded Tyreek Hill and won a Super Bowl. So maybe you should just sit this one out is what I think. But
you know, I don't throw that all over social media. I just talk about it on the show, and that's it. But Wichita State, I think they got a good coach. We'll see if it works out. And you know, Jerome Tang, you know, a lot, there were K-State fans that were wanting certain other names instead of Jerome Tang. And back in 89, there were KU fans that wanted people, a lot of coaches' names that they knew and didn't know anything about Roy Williams. I mean, it happens all the time where, you know, Chris Klieman wasn't the first choice for K-State fans, clearly, and that's worked out pretty well, right? So sometimes it's thank God the fans aren't in control, or people on social media aren't in control, or radio jocks are not in control of who's going to be hired or fired. I mean, we knew the Charlie Weiss thing was going to blow up in KU's face. That was easy to predict. But, you know, Lance Leipold, I think we all thought was going to be a good hire. Chris Klieman, we talked about, thought it would be a solid hire. Jerome Tang, I thought was a home run. And I said this before the season started. Never thought he'd do what he's doing first year. But I'm like, dude, that's the guy you want to get. Top flight assistant. Worked. He knows the Big 12 inside and out. He worked under Scott Drew. He's got a national championship. He knows the experience of the Big 12 and the NCAA tournament. So I thought it was a home run hire. And obviously it looks like an unbelievable home run. It's a grand slam hire with the way things are going right now. But sometimes it's not your first choice as a fan. That's just because you're the first choice, you don't get that person, doesn't mean that the guy they hired is a schmuck. And so, you know, this guy has been pretty good at Oral Roberts, had some success in the tournament. And right now, Wichita State should be satisfied just to get to the tournament.
Yeah. I'm just like, what are you wanting at Wichita State? I mean, it feels like a perfect fit for me based on who you're looking at to try to get and what kind of coaches you're able to get. And I mean, if you can get this guy who's had a lot of success, I mean, his 30 team was 30-5 this year. Like, they're a 12 seed out of the Summit League or whatever they play in.
Summit.
And it's like, that's not normal. Like I said, they were 15 last time they made it to the Sweet 16. And it's like that they, I mean, you get in that 5-12 line, you're highly respected as a mid-major if you get a 12 seed. Yeah. Let's just put it that way.
Right.
And I don't see anything from this guy over the last 3 years. And then the track record of what Baylor coached, like, it just look at what Tang did. Mm-hmm. And it's like, maybe you can apply a little bit of what he learned at Baylor with Scott Drew and Jerome Tang to Wichita State.
Yeah.
And that's enough for me as a Shocker fan to be really excited
about it. Agreed. But, you know,
I'm not a writer or radio guy in Wichita. Just wants to talk.
Who apparently thinks Wichita State's job is as good as, you know, Blue Bloods or something. Just, you know, grasp of reality would be helpful. KU women still alive. They avenge a triple overtime loss to Nebraska. They win in the Super 16 WNIT last night, 64-55. They move on and take on the winner of Arkansas-Texas Tech in the WNIT quarterfinals. K-State women on the court tonight in Seattle facing Washington. Tip-off late tonight at 9 o'clock. K-State women trying to win their 20th game of the year, move on to the quarterfinals as well. Wouldn't that be something if K-State KU women would meet in a WNIT championship? I think that's possible. I don't have the bracket.
I think it would be the...
Would it be the four?
The Fab Four is what they call it in the Fab WNIT. Four. The Great Eight and the
so
Fab
they
Four.
Both, if K-State win their next two games and KU wins the next one, they would play each other in the Fab Four. I wonder where that game would be played, Lawrence or Manhattan?
Ooh, probably Lawrence, based on the way things went. I would think that KU should probably get the home game there, just based on how everything went.
I don't know exactly how they determine the home games anymore on the WNIT, but there was a time where it was simply based on attendance. Which K-State always. That's why they got so many games at all, because their attendance way better than anybody else. And one more thing before we get to Brandon Cox, head coach of the boy baseball team, to preview their season, which starts tonight for JV at Hoisington and Varsity on Monday against Concordia. And then we'll preview softball with Tyler Odell Beloit coming up on Monday. But, you know, the Big 12, Brad Heaney said, the voice of Jayhawks yesterday on our show, that he was hoping K-State was going to do well and carry the banner for the Big 12 along with Texas, since KU, TCU, West Virginia, Baylor all flamed out, and Iowa State. And there were a few rumblings. Okay, is the Big 12 really that good if they can't get anybody deep in the tournament? And so people are talking about the Big 12 being the premier conference in America. And boy, I tell you what, you got a built-in promo here from Jerome Tang.
We've been a basketball conference. The last 4 years we've had the number one rating, and I mean, this year I thought we had 10 teams in our league that could play in the NCAA tournament. This is not new. The last two national champions have been from our conference, and if it wasn't for COVID, I think it would have been the last three. And even if you back up one, Texas Tech losing in overtime, it could have been four in a row. So we've been a basketball club. We're the best basketball conference in the country. And the coaches in our league are Hall of Famers. And I'm just thankful to be even associated with any of them.
Is there anything that Jerome Tang doesn't say right or do right? Honestly, I think if they beat Florida Atlantic, he should jump on the table, grab a microphone after taking his shirt off like Eric Musselman, and just celebrate like it's 1999, you know? Just do whatever you got to do, man.
I love when you can tell that he's kind of perturbed about a question, but he'll answer it and answer it succinctly and efficiently, and he'll back it up. Like,
yes, he will.
If he doesn't like something, because you could tell when that lady asked the question that he was like, because it was basically like, you guys are a football conference, you're trying to establish yourself as a basketball conference. Like, it doesn't have to be one or the other.
Right.
It's like, we are a basketball conference. Like, we're not trying to establish as a basketball conference. We are.
We are
a basketball conference.
Yeah.
And you could tell that it was like, I'm going to answer this, and I'm going to answer it right.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, for the local portion of the show here, we got some results and some baseball results and some powerlifting stuff.
Yes, powerlifting in Northern Plains League took place yesterday in Wilson, and the full standings, or full results, I should say, are posted online at ncksports.com. Lincoln won the girls' team title, and boys' team championship went to Thunder Ridge. Individual champions on the girls' side, Bentley Smith of Lincoln at 105, Josie Swatty from Sylvan Lucas 114, Jenny Galish of Thunder Ridge at 123, Lily Sinclair of Lincoln at 132, and Emily Hall from Lincoln at 165. Austin Crude of Rock Hills won the power weight division there. Also, the boys' individual champions, Caden Boudreaux of Lincoln at 132, Drace Walter at 140 from Sylvan Lucas, Caden McCoy at 148 for Lakeside, Lincoln's Caleb Daughter at 156, Justice Dion of Rock Hills at 165, Ian Christine of Lakeside at 173, Rock Hills' Ethan Kenworthy won the 181 championship, Dylan Bice at 198 for Thunder Ridge, Josh Ferguson of Thunder Ridge at 220, and also the Longhorns' Hunter Gitchell won the heavyweight class there yesterday as well. So again, full results at ncksports.com for Northern Plains League Powerlifting Championships. And baseball opened yesterday for Concordia, as the Panthers actually already matched their season win total from last year. They were 2-15 a year ago, but they won 18-0 in three innings over Republic County in game one yesterday, and then won 16-0 in five in their second game. So that's what happened with the Concordia Panthers against Republic County. Concordia's next games will be against the Beloit Trojans. So Beloit will open out their season coming up on Monday afternoon and evening, and Concordia with that doubleheader. The first game will be at 4:30. Again, they get rolling then in that. And again, I talked with Brandon a little bit before Concordia played, so we previewed Concordia in this as well, but we didn't have the record of 2-0. So, Beloit getting set to go.
Before we get to that, I had a listener say, is it too early to think how cool it would be for K-State to meet Texas for the championship game? No, it's not too early.
You can always dream.
You can always do. Well, they're only two wins away. Yeah. Well, I guess Texas three wins away. And then another person texted me and mentioned the radio personality we're all both talking about by name and said, he's the worst. He says the name. He knows exactly who we're talking about as well. So it's good to know it's not just us.